reading from the book of Isaiah. Shout out, do not hold back. Lift up your voice like a trumpet. Announce to my people their rebellion, to the house of Jacob their sins. Yet day after day they seek me and delight to know my ways, as if they were a nation that practiced righteousness and did not forsake the ordinance of their God. They ask of me righteous judgments. They delight to draw near to God. Why do we fast, but you do not see? Why humble ourselves, but you do not notice? Look, you serve your own interest on your fast day and oppress all your workers. Look, you fast only to quarrel and to fight and to strike with a wicked fist. Such fasting as you do today will not make your voice heard on high. Is such the fast that I choose, a day to humble oneself? Is it to bow down the head like a bulrush and to lie in sackcloth and ashes? Will you call this a fast, a day acceptable to the Lord? Is not this the fast that I choose, to loose the bonds of injustice, to undo the thongs of the yoke, to let the oppressed go free, and to break every yoke? Is it not to share your bread with the hungry and bring the homeless poor into your house, when you see the naked to cover them and not to hide yourself from your own kin? Then your light shall break forth like the dawn, and your healing shall spring up quickly. Your vindicator shall go before you. The glory of the Lord shall be your rear guard. Then you shall call, and the Lord will answer. You shall cry for help, and he will say, "Here I am." If you remove the yoke from among you, the pointing of the finger, the speaking of evil, if you offer your food to the hungry and satisfy the needs of the afflicted, then your light shall rise in the darkness, and your gloom be like the noonday. The Lord will guide you continually and satisfy your needs in parched places and make your bones strong. And you shall be like a watered garden, like a spring of water whose waters never fail. Your ancient ruins shall be rebuilt. You shall raise up the foundations of many generations. You shall be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of streets to live in. If you refrain from trampling the Sabbath, from pursuing your own interests on my holy day, if you call the Sabbath a delight and the holy day of the Lord honorable, if you honor it, not going your own ways, serving your own interests, or pursuing your own affairs, then you shall take delight in the Lord, and I will make you ride upon the heights of the earth. I will feed you with the heritage of your ancestor Jacob, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Good morning, Church Without Walls. Good to see you. My name's Gary. I'm the pastor of this fine establishment. And I would like to say, just to start, that I love social science because it tells us things that we already know, but it makes it seem valid and more important. And so just the other night, I read an article which says, this is just from Bloomberg, It's sort of taking a sociological temperature of folks in the United States right now. And it says in like very sophisticated academic language that Americans are officially freaking out. Did all this survey, and given the national climate and the challenges that we hear every week in the news, almost two-thirds of us would say that this is the lowest point in U.S. history. Now, you know, Americans aren't especially good at having a good historical consciousness. But people, it's a feeling thing, right? Like, this is the worst ever. And like, okay, maybe it's the worst since, like, Reagan. I don't know what it is. But people aren't even sleeping, right? And I think this is, it was relevant to me because I feel this. And I feel this partly because of time and because of our schedules, and specifically the way that this bad news, which is around us and we hear all the time, is so universally accessible, right? Think about the way that a previous generation would have received and heard bad news. It would tend to be about twice a day. Once, you'd get the morning paper, right? I was actually a paper boy growing up, and you would, you know, people would get their newspaper and they'd be like, ah, bad news, whatever, and then you'd go out your day. And then you could come home from a day of non-bad news, or maybe just bad news at work, and then you have the evening news, and you're like, ah, more bad news. But then you sort of go about your life, and you go to, but now, it's like this, right? And especially if you follow Twitter, you're like, ah, 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 it's just like, You know, you wake up in the morning and I have my phone right there because it's my clock, right? And then sometimes I roll into like Facebook, which is always a bad idea, but I keep doing it. It's like everywhere, right? From the moment you wake up, and I know that a lot of you are on social media during the day when you're purportedly working because I can see it in real time. So it's around us all the time, right? We just, not all of us are, I know. But it's, I think the point is like we've gone to a sort of a schedule of bad news, which is at least accessible 24/7. And some of us push back against that and we're like, I'm not gonna engage in that. But we have to make a conscious decision. It's there. It's there for the taking. Does that make sense? And so I think, at least for me, that's this is kind of true confessions now. It's sort of created a little bit of a justice crisis for me. You would think that an increased awareness of all the injustice and evil that's happening in the world, you would think that would galvanize me to more action than ever. Right? Wouldn't that be like, this is a time of crisis, like we got to show up, we better be there. But for me, what I've found is that often my choices are to be overwhelmed or to be disengaged. That's what it feels like, right? Either I really embrace everything that's happening and I'm just aware of all the evil all around me, all the injustice, and I just like, I'm paralyzed. Or I say, I can't deal with this anymore. I'm just not going to listen to it anymore. I'm going to disengage from it, and I'm going to float off into some fake sort of happy land somewhere that I'm just going to ignore it. And I think that's probably not just my experience. I think there are a lot of us in this room that would feel something like that. The sense that the freak out for us causes us to either disengage or to feel overwhelmed. And so I think that in that sense, the conversation that we've been having on Sabbath is actually really helpful. And so we can go back to the slides now. Because we're in the middle of a conversation, a very long conversation, most of this fall, where we're really looking at how the ancient Jewish practice of Sabbath allows us to find new life, to find new freedom, even in these challenging contexts, that move beyond just disengagement or being overwhelmed. There's a place of Sabbath as rest, which is really life-giving to us. There's a place of remembering who we are and what God has done for us that actually creates a resistance to all the kind of world around us. And there's a way that we're doing this in community, which supports this very practice. And there's a passage I just want to read from Abraham Heschel, from his classic book on Sabbath, where he talks about one of the ways that Sabbath can really sort of help us in contexts like this. And he says, this is actually his daughter writing. And her daughter, it's cool. Like, I hope my daughter writes about me one day this way. I doubt it, but I can always hope, right? But she writes about her dad's practice of Sabbath and how that really like reflected on their whole family. And since he wrote the classic book on it, I mean, I hope it at least worked for her daughter. But here's what she writes about her dad. She writes, "My father said, you shall kindle no fire on the Sabbath," like, you know, in order to cook. But he says, "not even the fire of righteous indignation." In our home, certain topics were avoided on the Sabbath. Politics, the Holocaust, the war in Vietnam, this was like the 1960s, while others were emphasized. Observing the Sabbath is not only about refraining from work, but about creating menuha, a restfulness that is also a celebration. The Sabbath is a day for body as well as soul. It is a sin to be sad on the Sabbath, a lesson my father often repeated and always observed. So I've been trying to practice this on my Sabbath, where like we have certain political figures that shall not be named on Sabbath, you know, and it's really life-giving. And you know, somebody starts complaining, or I start complaining, my kids will do it to me, I'll start complaining, and my kids will be like, it's Sabbath, and I'll be like, yes, no more, you know? It's really cool. And so I think that this sort of experience of Sabbath, there's a lot of hope that we can receive something, we can receive a freedom that's outside our typical experience of freaking out. And last week we began to talk about how our whole community can help us with this. This isn't just an individual thing that like Sarah and Namoda have to do on their own, but Sarah and Namoda can actually help each other. And since we're all doing it, it's actually really helpful. And so this week I want to look at a particular passage, this beautiful passage that Sarah just read, that I had never noticed before had the word Sabbath in it. Like, this is one of my favorite passages in the Bible. It's a passage that a lot of us love. Tim preached on it wonderfully this summer. But I never noticed it has the word Sabbath in it, so it's a great excuse to actually preach on it today. But it's a bit of a, I was worried that it was a bit of a sort of bait and switch, right? This sort of nice sense of like, hey, on Sabbath, we don't do anything that's unhappy. Where it's a joyful time. It's a time away from all the bad news. But this passage doesn't quite seem like it. I don't know if you noticed that in the reading. We'll get into that in just a second. How is this passage good news for us? But first, I want to just give us a little quick context. Whenever you read the Old Testament, the Hebrew Bible, you have to know what part of the story that it's talking about. And this particular passage is actually talking about the part of the story when Israel, they'd had their glory years, they had their temple, everything was great. The temple got destroyed, they became exiles, and now they got to come back and there was a bunch of ruins. So that's this passage, probably the context there. And so this is important for us because in this series, we've been talking about the command to Sabbath during the Torah, during the early stage of Israel's life. And you know, but this is actually much later. This is the prophet Isaiah, much further along. There's a whole lot of water under the bridge. There's a lot of stuff that's gone on. And it's this new call to Sabbath. This is in a sense, even more important. Because it used to be like Israel, the center of Israel was the sacred space of the temple. And then that temple got erased. So what happens now? So it's like Sabbath actually, the center of the Jewish faith actually becomes sacred time. The experience of God becomes not just a place, but a sacred time. And so Sabbath becomes, if anything, even more important than when it was given in the Ten Commandments. Really, really important. So what we see in this passage, here it is, this passage of where it talks particularly about the Sabbath, is a raising of the importance of Sabbath to even where it was before. And so I think that just the way that God had a word for them in that particular season, that God has a word for us today in the season of sort of freaking out in which we are living today. It's a word that, you know, like you notice it's been colder this week. And so I realized that I need a new pair of gloves. And gloves are not on sale this time of year. Why? Because everybody knows that people like me will need gloves and they'll say, I don't have them. And so demand is high, so the price is going to be high. If I were smart, I would have bought gloves in the spring when the price is low, right? Just like if you were smart, you went to the stores on November 1st to buy your Halloween candy, right? It's a good life hack. It's much cheaper, but it's out of season. I think that God has a word for us about Sabbath in our season this morning. And I think a key to this word is, as we see here, a couple of times, there's the word delight. If you call the Sabbath a delight and the holy day of the Lord honorable, later on, like towards the end, it says, then you shall take delight in the Lord. There's a sense of delight that we get to experience in Sabbath in the midst of this passage. In a sense, this is what Israel was really looking for in the place of the ruin, their whole ruined culture, their ruined land, their ruined cities, their ruined culture. They were looking for a delight in the Lord. But it wasn't just as simple as take a nice Sabbath and you'll feel better. So let's quickly go through this text. I wish we had more time for all of this text, but I'd just like to give you a quick overview, and then I hope you can sort of read it through yourself at another time. So very quickly, this passage starts out with a quarrel. It starts out with a fight. The prophet says he's going to tell everybody how what they're doing is actually rebellion and they're messing up. But then we see that the people themselves think everything's doing great. They think they're faithfully living out Sabbath. We're doing great. But the prophet says, no, this is not going well. And this is the complaint of the people. They're like, hey, we're fasting. And in fact, the fasting, which is like where you go without food for a while for religious purposes, that was becoming part of this whole Sabbath practice, right? Sabbath wasn't just you take one day off to rest, but they had all these days where they didn't eat, they had all these festivals. It all kind of went together in this big Sabbath thing. And they're saying, look, we're doing it. We're doing the Sabbath, but we're not feeling the love. Like, where's this delight that you told us about? And so the prophet Isaiah responds to them and says, actually, the reason you're not feeling the love, your reason you're not feeling the delight, the reason you feel disconnected, even though you're doing the thing, you're doing these fastings, you're doing the Sabbath, you're doing your religious observances, It's because basically it's not affecting your day-to-day life. Even though you fast, it's still status quo in the wild, wild west of capitalism, where you're oppressing your workers and it's every man for himself, to use that phrase, where he says, actually, what God wants is for Sabbath, this religious observance, to overflow into a concern for justice, for the poor and the marginalized. It's not just like, you know, this bowing your head and wearing all these old clothes that they would do when they were fasting. It's not about that. That's just the surface level. What it really is about is these beautiful passages about undoing the bonds of injustice and of letting the oppressed go free and breaking every yoke, as we sort of see. And what you see in all of these passages is a whole bunch of if-then statements, right? Like, take a look at this. Where's the if-then? If you remove the yoke from among you, the pointing of the people, if you offer your food from the hungry and satisfy the needs of the afflicted, then your light will rise in the darkness. And all these beautiful metaphors for the prosperity, the delight, the good things that God has. This sort of reminds me of the only thing I learned about computer programming in the seventh grade. You know, that's the extent of my IT experience, is like if-then statements. You know, you put it into the programming, if, then go to line 40. And so you could sort of say, you know, if the answer is yes, then print, Gary is a great guy, and it prints it down the street, and you're like, yay, I'm a computer programmer. This is like an if-then statement. It's stating this deep spiritual truth that if we practice our faith, if we practice our Sabbaths, our fastings, these sort of religious observances, in a way that empower the poor, that engage with the poor, if we do that, then that delight that we so much need in this time of stress, in our lives that are so hard, if we are concerned for the poor the way God is, then all these blessings will pour upon us. Our bones will be made strong. Our needs will be satisfied in parched places. We'll be like a well-watered garden. Your ancient ruins will be renewed and rebuilt. And for Israel, this was like metaphorical, but it was also literal. Like, they were literally looking at the ruins of houses the way people in Sonoma County have to look at the ruins in the houses, or Mexico City, look at that. And they're saying, you know what? There's this link between the way you treat the poor and the way that's reflected in your Sabbath practice and in your fasting, and your experience of delight, your experience of freedom from sort of freaking out and this weightiness that feels like it's all around us. And then, of course, we see this link explicitly here on the Sabbaths as well, that if we practice Sabbath, that sense of like caring for the poor, the marginalized, the oppressed, as that part of our Sabbath observance, then we're going to know that delight. Then we will have that. That's what this passage is really saying to us. It's calling us to something, a practice of Sabbath that's maybe different than we would think. All right, this is a beautiful passage. I've read this many times. Maybe you have too. Maybe it's your first time. Doesn't matter. But for me, what I felt in reading this as I really struggled with this passage was like, this feels a little bit kind of like a bait and switch, right? Because Sabbath is supposed to be about rest. Like, we're going to rest. And we're going to be away from everything that's hard and difficult. And now in this passage, it says actually part of Sabbath is to care for the poor and the oppressed and get out there and care for the homeless and stand with the marginalized and all that stuff. So is this kind of saying that, like, you know, you have 6 days you work hard and then on the seventh days you work hard for justice? Like, that sounds exhausting. I'm like, I'm not into that. I don't think that's what this passage is actually saying, though. Two quick things to observe about these passages is, first of all, if you are fasting, if you're not eating, like say you go a day without eating, you actually have a surplus of food that you could do something with, right? So the idea, it's a very direct link in this passage to, you do this religious observance, you don't eat, then you can give that to who? Those who are hungry, right? But what they're saying is what you're doing is you're fasting, you're just storing it up, and then you're having whole bunch more for yourself later on. What they're saying is, you see the obvious link, you do a fasting, you have something to give. In the same way, Sabbath originally had very strong social justice implications. There's this idea that everybody doesn't work on this special day, this Sabbath day. And that's because most of the time, and it was very clear, the command was very clear, like your animals, the working class, slaves, there was slavery back then, all these, for everybody, there's a sense of like rest for everybody. So it was a justice thing. In fact, it was even justice for the earth itself. Because, you know, how many of you know that you can over-farm and you can like kill the land and the soil? So to not farm once every 7 years, which is part of the structure, or even every week, it gave the land a rest. It was good for the environment. It was good for the animals. Even the animals had a rest. So there's a social justice sort of angle to Sabbath from the beginning that I'm not sure actually is the same link for us. It's not as exactly clear how if we take rest for once a week, that will have a social justice angle. So as we close here, I'd just like to share some thoughts about how this might matter to us. How could we do Sabbath in a way that actually calls us into the experience and the practice of justice that Isaiah 58 talks about? And because I think a lot of times, at least for me, sometimes when I try to do Sabbath, it feels like more of an escape than an engagement. You know what I mean? Like, you know how you go on vacation and at the end of the day, you don't come back from your vacation ready to like, all right, I'm ready to jump into the important work that I'm doing in my life. I'm so energized. You're like, dang, I'm gonna buy a timeshare in Hawaii. You know, like that Sabbath life, I just want that to be my whole life. I just want a life of rest. And it can be a sort of escape. Like real life is grim. I don't want to do that. I want to get away from that. I think this is a passage of Sabbath whereby at the end of Sabbath, we are actually empowered and enabled to not disengage anymore, to step back in and see the evil and the injustice around us and to be able to say, I can do this. Whether that's through your job, whether that's through our financial giving, whether that's through our volunteering, whatever that looks like, whether it's just loving your neighbor around you, whatever that is, the intention of God in Sabbath, and we can sort of tell if Sabbath is working. That's like for me, my Sabbath is on Tuesday. The question is, how do I feel on Wednesday morning? You know? And so obviously that's not in our control necessarily, how we feel. But what we can know is that one of the gifts that God wants to give us is a rejuvenation, a lack of freaking out and needing to disengage. And that Sabbath is the space whereby when we're done delighting ourselves in the Lord, we can then delight in the justice that the Lord delights in. And we can sort of step into that. That's certainly the hope. And I do want to share with you really briefly that I did kind of experience that this week, because I'm just trying to put this together, how this would look like for me. This week, as part of my justice practice, I've been trying to learn about environmental justice a lot. And so there's this article in The Lancet. Did I say that right, Judy? The Lancet, thank you. She's a medical professional. She would know. Troy's nodding. Okay, I'm good. But it's a well-respected medical journal. And they were looking at the public health effects of pollution in the world. And they were saying that actually pollution is the worst. It kills more people, especially more poor people, than everything else like put together. We think about all these things, but we don't notice it, right? Like when some crazy person shoots 59 people in Las Vegas, we can't help but be overwhelmed by that, right? But throughout the exact same day, tens of thousands of people died of pollution, and who notices, right? So I was, of course, very depressed by this article. It was good to know. But it's important. I was like, oh, I think I need to recalibrate some things. I was noticing that the news is defining what I care about as justice in ways that reality, it's not really true. Like, actually, I think I need to pay more attention to pollution and how I'm involved in that and how I can, you know, be an activist in those areas, right? So I sort of got some, like, I really want to do this, but I'm feeling a little overwhelmed. Then comes my Sabbath. And I got to spend the entire afternoon on the mountains of East Berkeley, sort of over, well, the hills, I guess, but overlooking the whole bay. And I just listened to music, and I just got to enjoy the beautiful creation in which, thank God, the fires are gone. I didn't see any pollution. I just enjoyed the beauties of God's own creation. It was really rejuvenating to me. And so when I got up on Wednesday morning, I went back to work. I actually joined the Sierra Club, if you can believe it or not. Like, I've never done anything environmental ever. Yeah, Nathan, you approve. Now, honestly, we've all heard of the Sierra Club. I don't actually know if they're the most effective organization, if this is the best way to do it. Like, I don't know. I'm trying to figure it out. But it was a little step for me, a little $15 and I get a free carrier bag and I'm going to go to some tree planting thing. The point is, my experience of Sabbath gave me some little energy. There was something in my heart that said, like, I'm not just going to be overwhelmed by the way we're destroying God's world. I'm going to do a little thing. I'm going to spend $15. I'm going to give it to the Sierra Club. I'm going to go to some meeting. I'm going to meet some tree huggers. I'm going to do some stuff. And there was some, there was a grace inside of me. There was a delight in doing that. It didn't feel like a grind, you know? It didn't feel like overwhelmed. There was something about stepping back and even experiencing the good things in creation itself and saying, I want that for everybody. That's the way I think Sabbath can sort of happen for us as well. And so I would like to offer you, each one of you here who call Church Without Walls your home, or even if you're visiting or you're just checking us out for the first time, I'd like to offer you something very communal, because Sabbath is very communal, this week, where we can experience something hopefully a little bit like this. Because twice a year, what we do in this community is we gather to give our finances to those who are poor, those who are marginalized, those who experience injustice, really the same people it names in this passage. We try to take this, in this instance, we take the Bible literally. We want to actually do this. And we also, I think you might have all experienced how it's hard to sort of give on your own. Some of us sort of give at the end of the year, like, what should I give to? I don't know, it's the end of the year, tax breaks. But we try to regularly, like in our small groups and in our gatherings, to say, we're going to give. And so we're going to do that this week. We are going to give in our life groups. If you're not part of a life group, you could come next week and you could sort of give. And here's how it would work. My hope is that it would connect to our Sabbath through in this sort of a way, where we take one day to not work. That's the Sabbath part. And then where it connects to Isaiah 58 is, what if we took a day of our work, another day in the week, and what if we named that day? What if you said, for you, it's Thursday? And what if everything you earned that day, you then gave to those who are poor? And so that day, you'd put it on your calendar. It would be part of your time schedule. It'd be part of this whole work-life rebalance. And this is the day. You're not working for yourself that day. You're working for these people. In fact, it might be sort of news which has overwhelmed you, like that Lancet report did for you, or did for me. But in this day, you're not just being overwhelmed by it, you're actually working for this group of people, for this issue. And there's something empowering about that, if God gives you the grace for it. Now, I understand not all of us are in a financial situation to work. That might be crippling for us. There's actually an organization that's formed by Pastor Eugene Cho of Quest Church. It's part of our same denomination in Seattle. And a whole bunch of them in their church do this regularly. You can check out the organization. But for us, I'd like to encourage you to choose some day this week to connect it to your Sabbath and to just do that work. Even if you're a student, to say, like, all right, I have this much of a stipend, I'm going this much into debt, all right, I'll give this much. Whatever that looks like. There's a lot of freedom. You might want to do 1 hour's wages. If that's what you can do, that's what God is really thrilled with, right? It's not, okay, so one day, it's just to sort of connect that with our Sabbath practice. And then the encouragement is to actually, in your life group this week, we'll actually give together. You might sort of give on your phone. You might write a check and bring it and pray over it. And I'd encourage you then, as you give in your life groups, or if you're not part of a life group, you could give on your own. And then to next week, come and with the giving station right there, we'll have little slips where you can share how much you gave or where you gave, who you gave to. And then our church, with our missions budget, with, you know, we give to this church centrally, we're going to match the top three organizations that you gave to. Right? We're going to match, like, because in the past we sort of said, we're going to match everywhere everybody gives, and then we write 27 checks, and it doesn't really work. So as we do every year, or twice a year, we're going to match that. And I'd love to encourage you this year to consider, it's always good to be thinking anew about, like, should I give to some new organization? And that's great if you choose to do that. I'm rethinking, with my sort of new environmental conscious, I'm thinking about that too. But I'd love to encourage you just to consider also the places and the organizations that are doing good justice work that we've already given to, whether that's Men of Valor, whether that's the Equal Justice Initiative and Brian Stevenson, Quick word, don't give to Little Sprouts Preschool because they are now financially solid. They're a social enterprise organization, and they don't need your money. So don't give to them. Do consider giving to the Association for a More Just Society in Honduras. One of the leaders of that organization was here praying during a time. And also consider giving to Mennonite Central Committee. If you can see the cool round hourglass-looking thing, that's where our families and our children are giving to Mennonite Central Committee is, and Sarah, right? Sarah chose this along with Gaddy, one of the best organizations for being very present and connected to those who have been experiencing natural disasters around the world. So I will send out all these organizations in an email this week, but I just want to encourage you, like, this is a way that I think we can experience a different kind of delight, maybe a different kind of self-care than we might think. That's not just escape, but one that allows us to experience the delight of the Lord in rest, and then also have that overflow into our work and into our work life, and to experience the delight of the Lord in actually seeing the world change, at least for a few people who are experiencing the injustice and the overwhelming bad news that are around us. We get to be a little light in at least a few people's life, and we get to do that together this week. So I'd like to invite the worship team to come up now, and I'd like to invite us to continue to delight ourselves in the Lord through worship today, and just to be open to see how that will refract and reflect onto all of our lives together this week. Amen.